FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and today is January 23rd, 2020, and we're just back from Vancouver from the Resource Investment Conference. It seems like the worm has turned. The optimism, I haven't seen it this good since 2011. Even in 2016, when the markets had turned around, everyone was very cautious, circumspect, and then it looked like the rally was finally about to be upon us, and then it died. We don't really get that kind of guarded, cautious optimism. They were a little optimistic last year, but 2018 in the metals market was a horrible time. You know, what I look at to really get the indication of what's happening in these precious metals markets, there's two or three metals that I watch that people don't buy. If you're an investor, I guarantee you don't own platinum. You don't own palladium, and you certainly don't own rhodium. And there's just been a pretty monster move in all of these metals. Well, platinum the least, but platinum is over $1,000 again and heading up. Palladium right now, it's in that $2,300 to $2,500 range. The one that really amazes me, rhodium, broke $9,000. It's on its way up to $10,000. And don't ask what you do with rhodium. You know, if you're into fountain pens, you know all about rhodium, but that's not its main use, used in catalytic converters. They don't even know where to find it. It's so rare. There's a mill and a mine in Mongolia that could be the world's greatest producer. It could just print money for Mongolia, but they've screwed it up. You know, talk about intervening in free markets, everything else. But we're thinking about metals here. We've got a new guest on with us today. I am thrilled to have him on. Your name is Lawrence Lepard, otherwise known as Larry. Larry, you run Equity Management Associates in Massachusetts, and you focus on investing in precious metals, which you have since 2008, and you've been involved in venture capital and basically the financial sector. So we're thrilled to have you on here. And just wondering, gold markets, what you're seeing in the marketplace.
Yeah, thank you, Kerry. I think we're in a multi-year bull market in gold and silver. I think that it's driven by the policies that are being followed by the government, all governments, really. Interest rates low, negative interest rates, money supply growth, etc. It's tricky because I thought that too in 2008, and it worked for a while. And 2009 was good, 2010 was good, 2011 started off good, and then wham, the bottom fell out of the gold market, and we had a mid-market correction. We had also had a large gold bull market from 2000 to 2008. I did not participate in that, but when the great financial crisis hit in 2008, I saw the government response and came to the quick conclusion that the right thing to do was to protect oneself in terms of being involved with sound money and companies that produce sound money. And so I made a pivot and educated myself on the mining business, and I've run a fund that picks gold miners, and I've run it since 2008. If you look at the picture today, I think the big news is that last summer, June 19th exactly, we broke out through the 1365 price ceiling per ounce U.S. in gold. That ceiling had existed for 6 years, so it was pretty big and pretty important, and that breakout on a technical level, I think, signaled to me and I think others, a lot of others, that we're back in a gold bull market, which means higher highs and higher lows, obviously moving in a zigzag pattern. I think the fundamental underlying driver right now, and I think it's going to drive it for some time, is that there is, in the United States, which has the senior currency in the world, the U.S. dollar is the reserve currency, and is becoming less so, but still represents a huge percentage of transactions and wealth is denominated in U.S. dollars. The management of that currency is finally starting to matter and getting so bad, so obvious that the world is saying, huh, maybe I don't want to have as many dollars as I have. Maybe I need something that's a sounder alternative. And so Gresham's law is starting to kick in, which basically states that, good money drives out, sound money drives out unsound money, and people hoard in the money that they think is going to hold its value, and they spend the money they think is going to lose its value. And, the government misbehavior piece, I think, is most driven and most obvious in the U.S. fiscal deficit, which has been running almost 990 or 980 billion last year, almost $1 trillion, which is up 45% since Trump took office. It was 600 and mid 600s when he took office. So in 3 years, we've managed to grow the deficit, 45%. And I really don't see any sign of that trend changing. I think the deficit will probably be, it's projected to be 1.1 to 1.2 this year. I bet it's larger. I bet it's closer to 1.3. And, you don't see any talk in Washington about cutting expenses. In fact, Trump just said he wants to have a second round of tax cuts. Any Democratic president, if they win, would be a big spender and has promised to increase social programs and reduce student debt, if not eliminate it, and so on and so forth. So these kinds of things, eventually, you can push on a reserve currency and you can rely on having a reserve currency to hold its value because of the history and the fact that, we've got the biggest military and so on and so forth. But eventually, people do start to notice what's going on. And, there have been studies that have shown hyperinflation tends to occur when you get to the point where your government deficit is greater than 20% of your government tax receipts. And right now, we're at 30%. And if we were to have a recession and or these spending policies continue, we're going to go to 40% or 50%. And I think in the study I saw, and I can't cite the author of it, but I remember reading that once you get to 50%, where your deficit is equal to half of your taxes collected, and if you're funding it, that's fine if you can fund it with legitimate debt being purchased by either people in your country or people outside your country. I mean, that's what Japan has done. But if you're unable to fund it in that manner, and you fund it via printing money, which is what we've tended to do, and most particularly we've done since 2014, when the foreign buying kind of went away, what you see is that, inflation, significant inflation breaks out, and ultimately hyperinflation is a real possibility. And I don't think the investment markets or most people in the United States are really considered that to be a risk or a possibility. And yet, I think it's quite clearly a risk, and I can't guarantee that it will happen, but I wouldn't want to bet against it happening. I think there's a high probability it happened. So,
yeah.
And thus, thus money and gold and silver coins first, and then stocks second. The stocks are obviously much riskier than the coins.
Sure. Aren't we really almost at a tipping point here, Larry? I mean, isn't there a point where it's a point of no return and you just can't service the debt except by printing and you can't go back?
Yeah. I mean, if you watch how it's happened, I mean, there've been other hyperinflations, Venezuela had one, Zimbabwe had one. I mean, this hyperinflation is not rare around the world over the last 100 years. There've been, I think, 70 of them. What would be extremely rare is that, a big developed country has one or the biggest developed country with a reserve currency. That would be unprecedented. A very developed country had one, very sophisticated, and that's Weimar Germany from 1919 to 1923, where the Deutschmark went from being very stable to basically being measured in trillions and ultimately being worthless to the point where people were carrying around wheelbarrows full of money to make purchases. I'm not saying we're going there, but I think there's clearly a lot more risk in the soundness of this money than the average person has considered. And to your point, Kerry, when things do start to snowball, I mean the way I think of it is it's like smoke in a theater. Okay, the first people smell it, maybe they quietly slip out, and then a few more smell it and they quietly slip out. And my opinion is that gold is around 1500, 1600 now. The 2011 high was about 1900. I think when we take out 1900, more people are going to be smelling smoke. And they're going to go, oh, wow, it was new high in gold.
Mm.
I don't know what that means. And then when we take out 2,500, it's going to have been up for 3 years in a row. And people are going to go, wow. And maybe the inflation is going to be even more obvious. I mean, obviously, Kerry, you know, and most people probably who are listening to this know that inflation is much higher than what the government states it as. And I think, you know, it's going to become more and more obvious. And I think, you know, there's nothing like self-preservation, you know, to turbocharge a trend. So, you know, if you're out there and you see your money is losing value every day and you see gold is going up every day, you know, pretty soon you're going to say, huh, I'm going to take my savings. I'm not going to hold them in dollars. I'm going to use them to buy gold because I know where this ends. And eventually the line goes straight up. I mean, there are charts of Weimar Germany and you can see it. It kind of the slope just kind of keeps gradually increasing from 1921 to 1923. By November of 23, it was all over. And, you know, but, you know, you could see it. 22 was pretty hairy. I think the point of recognition was late 21 in Weimar. And my view is we're probably in about 1920. You know, I don't think the real point of widespread recognition probably occurs until later this year, early next year. And that's when, you know, step one will be we go through 1900, you know, all-time new high. That'll make some headlines and people go, wow, that's interesting. Gold is making a new high. I wonder why. And then when it accelerates from there and everyone thinks, okay, well, that's got to be a peak. There'll even be some people who will short it and go, well, it's an all-time new high. It won't last. You know, it's extreme. Right. And then, you know, it'll just quickly go from 1900 to 25. And then people start saying, huh, that's really strange. You know, this, maybe there's something going on here.
Yeah.
And there's more, you know, it's more and more people recognize it. Yeah. The tipping point is reached and eventually it goes to infinity. I mean, you can't buy gold in dollar terms because no one wants the dollar.
And in any other fiat currency, because we all know that gold's been trading at highs in something like 73 other currencies, been at all-time highs. In fact, the one currency conspicuous by its absence from that group is the U.S. dollar.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And by the way, it's not just gold. I mean, I know there are people who are against it, but I'm not. I actually sincerely think that Bitcoin will have a role to play in the sound currency world and game. And I think it's entirely possible that there will be other countries that might somewhere along here try to take strategic advantage of this and say, you know, we're going to back our currency with gold. You know, China might have enough gold to do it. Russia runs very small government deficits. They might decide they want to do it. You know, and once there's a gold-backed currency that's, you know, tested and legitimate, you know, then that would accelerate the process, I think.
No doubt that would. So you really think that Bitcoin has a lot of security weaknesses that haven't yet been discovered by the market. Perhaps the next generation or the generation after that of cryptocurrencies have a better chance. What's your take on it?
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next.
Lumina Gold, ticker symbol LUM on the Toronto Venture and LMGDF on the OTC, is yet another of legendary mining investor Ross Beaty's Lumina Group. It's advancing the largest primary gold deposit in Ecuador. The resource is estimated to contain 16.7 million ounces of gold and 2.2 billion pounds of copper. At just $7 US per ounce gold equivalent, it trades at an incredible 13% of its net present value. More good news is on the way with an updated PEA study expected in Q2 of 2020. It has unparalleled infrastructure. There's grid power to camp with plentiful, inexpensive hydropower available. It's close to two ports and is just 8 kilometers from a paved highway. Water is plentiful. It's at low elevation. And the closest community, which is very supportive of Lumina's effort, is just a 7-kilometer ride. With all this going for it, it's likely to follow the typical Ross Beaty formula, which means big returns to shareholders. Find out more and sign up for notifications at luminagold.com. That's Lumina, L-U-M-I-N-A, gold.com.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Well, I'm not really an expert on Bitcoin, but my belief is that it's, you know, Satoshi developed it in 2008, and it has been up there for 11 years now. And, you know, the blockchain is immutable, and there are 14,000 nodes worldwide. And, you know, it solved the Byzantine general's problem. And I, you know, to me, Metcalfe's law is what's driving that whole thing. It's the network effect. And, you know, it's the first mover with the most and the most users. So I'm actually, you know, I'm quite confident that it'll survive and become quite big and quite valuable. You know, the coin theft and the security problem of, you know, having your own coins and the technical knowledge necessary to do so. I mean, that's kind of been a barrier to entry for some people, and it's been a scary thing. I mean, it's, you know, the stuff is nuclear. I mean, if you make a mistake sending it, you can't get it back.
Yeah.
You know, so you've got to really know what you're doing. And that is a barrier, but that'll be solved. I mean, to me, I was involved in the internet, watching the internet develop. And, you know, when I was involved in Netcom, which was the first internet service provider, and, you know, we were working with modems, and, you know, it was 9,600 baud dial up, and you had to wait for the green screen to come on. You didn't have Windows, and, you know, it was pretty kludgy, and AOL came along and made it slightly easier. And then, of course, we all got broadband, and it got a lot easier. And so, you know, I'm willing to bet that the innovations, I mean, you're right, it's early, but I'm willing to bet innovations solve the problems that you're describing. But there are no doubt there are some problems, particularly for the unsophisticated user.
Yeah. And the fact,
but I'm bullish on it.
Well, you might be right. It still hasn't gotten to its all-time high of 19,400 to 700. It has made
a halving. There's a halving coming up, and if you look at some of the good work that's been done on Twitter about it, I suspect that, you know, that high will fall sometime within the next 18 months. Would be my guess.
Well,
we'll see. I mean, look, it's not for everybody. It clearly has technical risk. I mean, you know, compared to gold, you know, gold is a much easier sound money choice. On the other hand, gold doesn't have the, you know, I don't think, well, gold is an easier sound money choice. Let's leave it at that.
Yep. Agreed. So silver has been the laggard. When is silver going to join the party?
Boy, I sure don't know. Soon, I hope, because I own a lot of it. You know, I don't know the answer to that. I think that, you know, silver, it tends to be more risk on in the precious metals space. Everyone kind of describes it as gold on steroids. It goes up faster. It comes down faster. It isn't, in terms of stock to flow ratio, there's not a big stock. It's much more of a commodity that gets used. It's used in solar cells. You know, half of what we produce, you know, gets put into investment, and I think half roughly gets used and consumed and probably not recovered. And but it is more plentiful. I think it's a 16-to-1 ratio in the Earth's crust, and there are a lot of silver mines around. You know, I don't know the answer, but I do know that if you look at the gold to silver ratio, and you look at, if you believe in technical analysis, you know, it's bumping along at the all-time highs of gold being highly valued compared to silver, which started to turn down and broken through some trend lines. And that's, if you look at prior gold markets, if you look at the gold bull market from 2003 to 2008, or you look at the gold bull market from 2008 to 2011, it exhibited the exact same kind of price pattern. So the fact that the gold-silver ratio has broken down and silver is starting to perform better vis-a-vis gold indicates to me another piece of the puzzle that says to me we are in a serious bull market for these precious metals. And I think you and I will be happy with what silver does in the next year or two. I mean, we'll be happy with what gold does too. But, you know, if we're in a bull market for precious metals on a percentage basis, silver will go up faster than gold. There's no doubt about that. There's just not enough stock,
right?
You know, for gold to go up fast. I mean, there's a lot out there. So.
Yep. No doubt. Hey, agreed. So we got some exciting times ahead, and the stocks are going to presumably follow it. But on the other hand, look what's happened with the Dow Jones Industrial Average. You know, I got into this podcast, into internet broadcasting, back in 2011. The Dow was 12,000. Very few people were calling for it to hit the levels that it has now, other than Martin Armstrong. And yet here we are, it's probably going to go higher. My feeling is nobody really understands the gravity of this bull market, how intense it is, and why it's happening. And it's just going to keep going higher.
Yeah. I don't have a strong opinion on that one, Kerry. I mean, the line I like, I picked it up, I stole it from somebody else off Twitter, is, you know, free money is one hell of a drug. You know, you know, when you give Wall Street, you know, bailouts, and you let them borrow at, you know, 50 basis points, and you know, you continually backstop them on every downturn. You come in, you know, guns blazing with money into the system. You can get in very deeply ingrained bullish behavior that leads everybody to buy every single dip. And, you know, that's certainly what we're seeing in the U.S. stock market and in particular companies, too. I mean, it's, you know, one of the things I run a gold stock fund, and I compete, you know, with other sources of, you know, investments for their money. And I talk to people and say, hey, you should put some money in this area because it diversifies your risk. And they're like, why should I do that? Apple goes up every day, you know?
Yeah.
Or, you know, I'm in Tesla and I love what it's doing. It's going straight up. Okay, fine. I mean, it's, you know, that could end badly, but that's not my job to tell you that. What I can tell you is that, you know, my stuff is sound and I'm undervalued and I think it'll continue to go up. But when you know, to me, we're in somewhat of a mania / blow off in the stock markets, but that could go a lot further. And, you know, obviously the way I've expressed my bet against it is not to short the market. And of course, anybody who has in the last 6 to 10 years has been just carried out, but I've expressed it to be long something that represents real value that I think will go up with the market. So, and that's obviously gold, silver and gold and silver mining company. So,
all right.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll kind of leave it there. I really appreciate your coming on, spending your time with us, and it'll be interesting to see when the market comes to its senses or the market participants come to their senses. Maybe that's what it really comes down to. Any questions or comments for Larry, myself, we'd love to hear from you. Email us kl@carrylutz.com, Twitter feed @CarrieLutz, Facebook page, Financial Survival Network, and you can visit our home site, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Sign up for our newsletter. Larry, how do people find you on Twitter?
People find me. So my Twitter handle is @Lawrence with a W, LAWRENCE, Lepard, LEPARD, just one word. I'm also, my email is llepard@ema2, Edward Mark Alpha, the number 2.com. I put out a quarterly letter. It's free. If you want to get on that news list, just send me an email. I'll put you on the list. And I'm pretty active on Twitter and all about precious metals and precious metals mining companies. So.
All right. Hey, appreciate you coming on. Talk to you again real soon.
Thank you, Carrie. I really appreciate the platform. I hope we help some people.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.